Tucked away in a corner of Mexico City's enormous Chapultepec Park, there is a sculpture of the Aztec god of rain and agriculture called Tlaloc. Fittingly, this sculpture of Tlaloc guards three enormous covered reservoirs that supply much of Mexico City's water on a daily basis. Carved horizontally and covered in water, this image of the god of rain and corn helps Mexicans remember how weather still has power and influence over their day-to-day life. It was Tlaloc's lasting power that muralist and sculptor Diego Rivera brought to life through his art when he was commissioned to beautify the Mexico City waterworks in 1952. It is this power that plays itself out every summer when thunderstorms come to the high basin of the world's largest city, thunderstorms that have the power to bring the city to an absolute halt. I have been there when that happened. Before the Spaniards arrived in central Mexico in 1520, powerful Aztec princes ruled the thriving civilization there. The Aztec princes were sort of latecomers to this region, but their prowess in battle and their drive for domination had made them the ruling class in and around Mexico City for about 100 years before Hernan Cortes and his men showed up in Veracruz. For the Aztecs, two gods ruled the universe: Huitzilopochtli, the god of war, and Tlaloc, the god of rain and agriculture. Tlaloc represented irrigation and corn, water and food, above and below, heaven and earth, and the cycle of all life. So revered was Tlaloc that an altar to him was built on top of the massive pyramid at the center of Mexico City. Similar altars stood atop smaller pyramids in all of the other towns. Citizens of the Aztec Empire could see Tlaloc's house daily. They could pray to him and offer him tribute, and as long as he was happy, life was good. The native Mexicans knew that Tlaloc had tremendous power. Too much water meant flooded cornfields, and too little water meant cornfields would shrivel and die. It made sense to venerate him and to keep him happy. The Mexico City officials were a bit surprised in 1952 when Diego Rivera explained the scope of his project. He wanted to build a sculpture to Tlaloc so large that it had to be viewed from a special hill that was built for that purpose. And when you visit the sculpture, you'll see what Rivera had in mind. By climbing the little hill adjacent to the sculpture, you can see all of Tlaloc lying there in his enormous 100-foot-wide pool. You can see him sowing 7 kernels of corn from his left hand while holding up 2 full ripe kernels, ears of corn, actually, in his right hand. You see all around him fish, reptiles, birds, insects, and flowers, each one fashioned out of bright mosaic tiles and surrounded by swirling water. Streams of water spout out of Tlaloc's forehead, and currents of water flow around his enormous feet. He looks like he might stand up from his pool at any moment to either bless you with a rain shower or smite you with a thunderstorm. In Chapultepec Park, Tlaloc, the water god, is alive and still very powerful. We too revere water, possibly in a less dramatic way. Water is as important to us as it was to ancient Mexicans. Each of us needs water to live. Each of us knows the beauty of being by a lake or a river or the ocean. Each of us has experienced rain showers and thunderstorms, like the really great one that came through here last night. Did you all see that? And each of us probably takes water mostly for granted, especially when we fill a glass from the kitchen sink or turn on the shower in the morning. We modern humans have harnessed water, and we assume that it will always be there for us. And in doing this, we may have actually angered Tlaloc ourselves, angered him by forgetting that he still has power, angered him by forgetting how precious and how vulnerable the sources of water are. As religious people, one of the things that we are required to do is to simply pay attention. We churchgoers do not have the luxury of ignoring the world around us. We cannot claim the excuses of being too busy or too uninvolved or too disinterested to pay attention to both the beauty and the horror of life. As religious people, we are the ones who must try to wake up the others time after time after time. We must shake our communities out of their hyper-consumer-induced narcotic slumber. We must rouse ourselves from the daydream that we ourselves have it made and that the world is getting better and better. We must arise from the couch of complacency to see how people the world over struggle to even have the basic necessities of life met, necessities like safe drinking water. I'm sure that many of you have been following the recent situation in Detroit, where the city is unable or unwilling to supply water to many of its citizens. Yes, Detroit is a rough place, and the city is in dire financial straits. But have we no shame as Americans? When the United Nations looks straight at our country and accuses it of human rights abuses in Detroit, do we shrug our collective shoulders and think, Detroit's a long ways away, not my problem? Who are we, the richest nation in the earth, the nation that consumes one-third of the earth's resources annually? Who are we when we can't even supply our own citizens with water? Tlaloc has surely met his match with the twin gods of greed and indifference. But there is a different way. There is always a different way. And Unitarian Universalists can play an important role in this different way. We can play an important role because we know that our fate is bound up in the fate of all. We know that what affects the earth affects all humans. Our faith is an embodied faith. There's a reason we use water gathered from many sources to christen our children during our child dedications here at First Parish. In this ritual, we want to acknowledge water as the source of all life. We want to remind ourselves that water is precious and sustaining and holy. When I dip a white rose into the water in our 1799 christening bowl, it is not some meaningless ritual I perform. Rather, I know that the water I use honors the child and the earth. It reunites that child and, by extension, each one of us to that source of all life. The water and the flower and the little human for a moment are one. It is a holy moment. It is a powerful moment. It is a moment that we must waken, each of us, to the preciousness of life. For what we do together on a Sunday morning is not some quaint ritual, some throwback to old superstitions. Rather, what we do on a Sunday morning has such transformative power that it cannot let us stumble through the week ahead half asleep. Worship exists to wake people up. It exists to help them see their role in the world around them. Worship exists to exclaim that life is bigger than we are and that we play a crucial role in it. There is no dissonance between what we do inside these walls and what we do outside them. All life is one, past, present, and future. Our job is to remember and to act. Diego Rivera's choice to honor the water god Tlaloc was as controversial in his time as Unitarian Universalism's neo-paganism is controversial in our time. What, wondered predominantly Catholic Mexico, was Rivera doing, building a statue to a pagan god? What message was he trying to convey? Was he trying to remind the Mexican people that old beliefs still influenced their lives? Was he speaking to modern society about its need to remember that nature was here first? Was he reminding us that if we ignore nature's power, we do so at our own risk, warning us that if we abuse nature's gifts, we do so at the peril of our very species? Like Diego Rivera, Unitarian Universalists can bring these same questions to our world today. We can be the ones to remind others that the old nature gods have not gone away. We can be the ones to insist that they are not forgotten. We are the ones to offer them our assistance, wherever and whenever we might. So be it. Amen.